Dynasty Theory is now a proud member of the DLF family of podcasts, and we could not be more excited. Tune in each and every week when we provide actionable advice to help you navigate through the crazy world of Dynasty Fantasy Football. We're always diving into quickly changing values, market inefficiencies, and opportunities to help you build those dynasties. Make sure you also check out the show on Twitter and Instagram at Dynasty Theory FM. Enjoy.
Hello, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Read and React, the show where we take a look at the other side of fantasy football. My name is Tom Kisenberry, your indisputably cheerful Englishman, and I'm joined by the magnificent Mike Wallett with his beautiful beard. Mike, how are you doing tonight, bro?
I am doing all right. Another weekend of football. And just like that, we're already almost a quarter way through the season. Can you believe that? How quickly 4 weeks go?
Yeah, I was thinking that. Because as soon as you get to that four games, you're like, oh, okay, I've got some pretty decent data and stuff on this. So actually, let's go off the rail straight away. I promise I wouldn't do it. But sorry, it lasted like 1 minute.
Makes a better show.
Hopefully. This is why I like recording with Macri, because somebody came on Twitter and said, you and Macri, it's basically him trying to stick to the script, and you just saying, oh, I've just thought about this thing, and him trying to wrestle you back on it. But yeah, it's quite fun. Anyway, so I got really into the concept of using heuristics for football a couple of years ago. And you know heuristics, basically rules of thumb, right? You know, not perfect accuracy, but a good thing that gets you pretty close. So I did a load of work in using snap volume as a heuristic for scoring across all positions. And it is scarily accurate even after a few weeks. So if you look at like 4 weeks data, roughly, I can't remember the number, something between 50% and 65% of all top 12 guys in all positions are going to be top 12 by the end of the year. So it feels like really early days. And sure, some of those guys will fall out and other people will come up. But pretty much, you've got an idea of who's going to score well. And our brain's just not very good at computing that, right? Because we look at all these guys and go, oh yeah, sure, the safety I liked is down at 39 now, but he's just about to come good. And actually, we should be reacting quicker to things that we see.
That is interesting, because I think one of the guys right at the top, you have Marcus Williams. Is he going to maintain his scoring pace? You've got guys like Jonathan Owens. Is he going to maintain his scoring pace? Brandon Jones, who has been at the top, unfortunately, he seems now to be on the downward trend now for snaps, because I think he is now sharing snaps or ceding snaps to Eric Rowe, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, he did last week, and they did the same thing in week two as well, from memory. So Dolphins defense is really fascinating, but it's clearly good fun to watch, and they looked quite good early. I've got them as sort of bottom eight at the moment, borderline there. So, you know, too many flaws, too scary for me. But I do think they're clever, and I do think they're well run. And one of the things that is a hallmark of a clever defense for me is deployment of personnel in clever ways. And if they are going, look, we're going to put the right safety on the field for the right thing, because Eric Rowe plays more in the slot, right, and Brandon Jones plays more in the box. It's not that simple, but pretty much. I like what they do. I want to see it come together.
Yeah, I do too. Although I will say the Bengals did a pretty good job of blowing up my rankings this week, because with their offensive line here, I'm thinking, okay, Ogba's going to get a sack. Jerome Baker's going to get a sack because he's playing more on the edge. These guys are all going to have their hands in the cookie jar when it comes to sacking Joe Burrow or having really good games. And actually, they did a decent job in protection. I think they only gave up one sack. And it was the guy that you're like, we all thought Jalen Phillips was good, and here he actually had a pretty decent game. I think he had a handful of pressures, four or five pressures and a sack. But you know what? He was not a guy I was really interested in because of that whole switch from, I guess, their base 3-4, as I use air quotes. He got the linebacker treatment. So I really wasn't too on him just because of that aspect. But yeah, it's a pretty decent game. Obviously, everybody knows what happened to Tua Tagovailoa, but we won't get into that. But yeah, what was really interesting is Jerome Baker, 31 snaps on the edge, 3 pass rush snaps. So it's like they didn't take advantage of, or didn't take advantage of that weakness. And I was really kind of surprised to see that.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals like running the ball, right? Joe Mixon is pretty much as close as a workhorse back you've got in the NFL. So when I look at the Bengals, I'm probably being a bit naive here. I see quite a lot of early 90s run spread Urban Meyer stuff. You know, they run a lot of 3 and 4 wide receivers. They spread out the field and they rush from that, from the shotgun. It's way more complicated than that. They do a lot more than that. But if you're playing a defense or an offense like that, allocating someone to, you know, to do a bit of spying, not for the quarterback, for the running back, and making sure you set the edge, feels like a pretty sensible approach to it.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much what Baker did. Still finished with, I guess, an okay game, but I was hoping for at least a sack, but we digress.
Yeah, I mean, look, none of us expected Von Bell to intercept 2 different quarterbacks, right? How often do you do that?
And yeah, and I think Bates kind of showed up finally, if I'm not mistaken, in this game as well. So I always liked Von Bell as a player anyway, but, and that's not my Ohio State bias because I'm not a huge Ohio State fan.
Safeties have been weird this year. I mean, safety's always weird, right? We all know that cornerback is the least predictable position, blah, blah, blah. Safety is right up there with cornerback. It's just all over the place. So even, you know, a couple of years ago, there was a much clearer link between box safeties and free safety production. You talked about Marcus Williams already. We talked about the Texans. So Jalen Petre, Pida, however when you say his name, is clearly the box safety with Jonathan Williams playing deep safety, which, by the way, is quite surprising for me because, you know, we're talking Lovie Smith, right? Who do you think of when you think about Tampa 2? Lovie Smith. And in an era of 2 high safeties, you'd expect him to be doing that, but he's not. He's playing 1 high safety, quite a bit more than he used to. But the productivity is the other way around, right? They've both played every single snap, but the rookie is missing loads of tackles and the veteran, journeyman, is making tackles. So weird stuff like that. I just don't think the tackle efficiency of a free safety versus a strong safety, there is a difference, but it's like 1% difference. So over 1,000 snaps, you're looking at maybe 10, 15. That is well within the margin of error. So yep. We see it all the time where it looks weird.
Yeah, when it comes down to the season, I do think there's going to be that balance, hopefully. I mean, if I was going to pick one, if you were asking me, who do you trust for the rest of the season, Jonathan Owens or Jalen Petre, I'm going to take Jalen Petre.
Yeah, me too. Agreed. All right, so that's what we think you should do. If you could trade one of those, then give it a go. But, you know, people hold on to rookies, right? Because the same people that draft rookie safeties are the people that really believe in those rookie safeties. Mm-hmm. So you often can't get them off somebody this time of year anyway.
Yeah, Nick Cross is a good, I think, is a good example. Started off with I think he played a full game, and now he's seeded seeded to Rodney McLeod. Redraft, I think you can jump ship on Nick Cross in redraft, but yeah, I think in Dynasty, yeah, just hold on to him. But I've always been one of the guys that have had FOMO when it comes to trades and trading people. I, you know, if someone asks me to make, do I make this trade? I'm like, you know what? I don't know, because if I trade a guy, I immediately regret it, thinking, oh my God. And especially when someone accepts a quick offer and there's no counter, I'm like, holy crap, what did I just do? Did I just trade away the next Ed Reed, or did I just trade away? Like, so I'm not a good person to ask on trades, because I'm just going to like ride a guy. I think if there's and I don't know if that's a dangerous thing or what, but I tend to latch on to some of these guys, and I'm, you know, am I missing out, especially if someone quick accepts?
Yeah. And in many ways, we're not very good at trading advice anyway, because what our trades look like is quite different. So first thing, I'm sort of get where you're coming from there, and it's not about your tendency as a trader, it's about your league tendency, right? So if you get things like that, then sure, if you make 30 trades a year, then it's going to pay off and you'll be fine. But if you're not in a league where those trades happen, then that sucks, it won't happen. And the same problem is, if you've got an IDP podcast, you can't trade IDPs, guys. Not because you're super clever or you know everything, but nobody will trust you. So yeah, right. You offer low for people and they're like, right. Oh, you've got to pay first round because clearly you believe in him.
Yep.
You offer high for people and they go, no, I'm not doing that because clearly he's a superstar. So you sort of can't, because everybody in the league is going like, oh, this guy doesn't know any better than me. I beat him last year, blah, 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 blah. And nobody wants to look stupid. So you just can't trade.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, everybody wants to win a trade, and no one, you know, everybody wants to win their trade, and sometimes the best trades are the win-win ones.
Yeah. Right, let's move on from safeties and woe is me, because we've got a few things to get through this week. We even wrote some notes, which was mainly thanks to you, so...
Yeah, a little bit of preparation this week, so, you know, but we won't, but don't worry, we won't sound robotic or scripted.
Well, I hope not.
Otherwise,
just shoot me. All right, let's talk about Raiders. They're one of the things that you suggested we talk about, and it's quite big. So one of the big IDP stories in 2021 was Denzel Perryman, who played whatever it was, 750, 800 snaps, not a lot, but had off the charts tackle efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's been injured, but he's just about to come back. So we're expecting a bit of a shake up this week. There's a few things going on here. There's the Raiders who are a terrible defense again. When Patrick Graham signed, all the Raiders fans obviously were like, he's so great, he's brilliant. He's not. Raiders is really bad. They're one of the worst consistently bad defenses in the NFL for long years. I hope that changes. I wish them all the best. I've got some really great Raiders fans mates, but, you know, they suck. That's interesting. The other thing that's going on is that tackle efficiency we talked about. So, A, Denzel Perryman was just massively higher than anybody would have expected him or anyone else to be last year. But we are seeing tackle efficiency go up over time, and we're seeing it become more clearly linked to scheme as well. So, again, John's done a load of work on this. I've done a load of work in slightly different places. But we do see certain styles of coverage more productive, and Denzel Perryman and the Raiders are clearly one of those. So, you know, what's going on here? Who are you putting your money on for the next 4 weeks of the Raiders?
You know what? And this might be a problem with flag planting, but I at the beginning of the season, I didn't buy into Denzel Perryman. It was a new coaching staff, so there was no loyalty. So it wasn't like it was the same staff as last year. So Denzel Perryman is immediately going to fill in and assume his same role. It's a completely new staff. So I put my money on Divine Diablo at the beginning of the season and didn't really touch Denzel Perryman. So I'm following kind of my own lead, I guess, and I'm still following Divine Diablo. I think with Denzel Perryman returning, I think that's going to have more of an impact, in my opinion, on Jayon Brown. So hopefully you enjoyed your Jayon Brown couple of weeks, because I think Brown is probably going to be that third linebacker and the linebacker that comes off the field. And if they run single linebacker, I think it's Diablo who's going to stay on the field. Because he was the one calling the plays even when Perryman was on the field with him in week one before he got hurt. So there was no shift in that play calling duty. And for me, I think he's going to be the one that stays on the field for the majority of the snaps. I think Denzel Perryman is probably going to be a 70 to 80% guy going forward if he stays healthy. And I think Brown is probably going to be that base linebacker who probably just gets 20 to 30% of the snaps going forward.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So far, the Raiders are playing about 17% of snaps with one orthodox linebacker. Again, that doesn't mean they haven't got a safety in the box, but one orthodox linebacker slightly ahead of league average is about 14-15%. So they're pretty standard. And every week we've seen it, right? Divine Diablo in week one played 63. Jayon Brown played about 20 less. Divine Diablo played 87 in week two. Jayon Brown played about 20 less. Blah, 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 blah. You can see the pattern emerge. So there's clearly only one full-time linebacker. Now, that doesn't mean the second guy doesn't count, because he could easily in any given week finish. Well, if every team played the same amount of snaps every week, you'd expect that number two linebacker to be a probably very low LB3 or an LB4 or an LB5, something like that. So, you know, it's fine. In a week where they play a load of snaps, like week two, then you know, he might even be a top 24 guy. Divine Diablo is top 10 in snaps so far, and he's scoring like it as well. So I'm with you. I expect that to continue. Now, yes, I think Perryman over Brown for that second job. I don't expect him to produce way more than you expect on a per snap basis. And if you're really excited about some guy who's going to be a sometime LB4, 5, 6, cool, no problem. I mean, in your league, if you play four linebackers in a 16-team league, may well be really valuable to him. If you're in a league that has, you know, one linebacker and it's an 8-teamer, not valuable at all. But, you know, it's a sliding scale. It could be anywhere along that. And we're seeing so many of them this year, right? And I know we talk about this, but it is so important because it massively changes what we talk about. There is about 30 full-time linebackers. So if every team played the same every week and we've got no idea which team are going to play more or less, then those guys are going to be top 30. So if you're in a typical 12-team start, three linebackers, those are your guys with maybe a couple of guys sneaking in who get a sack from outside that. And then you've got another 15, 20, 30 guys who are going to play 70 or 80%, who are going to look good in certain weeks, but over the season, they're going to be LB4, 5, 6.
Yeah. What, now,
doesn't feel that complicated.
What do you consider? Do you consider full time 85 or higher, or 90% or higher, or are you full on 100%?
Yeah,
that's a full time guy.
So I'm 95%.
Okay,
because you know, if teams are far ahead and they take a couple of guys out, or there's a couple of weird, you know, certain trick plays or goal line defense and fourth and one, all that sort of stuff. So 100% doesn't necessarily mean 100%.
Yeah,
but yeah, it basically means you play every single snap unless something happens. And as soon as you don't, if they take you out in certain packages, I've built a new thing this week, by the way, which is all personnel by offensive package.
Yep.
So as soon as I finish it, I'll share all that. Really interesting. But you can really, really easily see there are a lot of teams who are very basic decision makers. Matt Eberflus, right? I'm always rude about him, so sorry, Bears fans. But he's really, really traditional. He's like 11 personnel, I go to 4-2-5. Mm-hmm. 12 or 21 personnel, I go to a 4-3 base. That's it. And the NFL is in 11 personnel.
A lot. 65-70% of the time, it's three wide receivers and a back and a tight end.
Right. So you do see teams making very clear decisions on personnel. And I think we've said this before, but that 10%, if you're an 85% player, that sounds really high. But that 10% is about 7 snaps per game. So over 10 games, that's 70 snaps. That's more than the whole game. And over 17 games, you're losing the best part of two games versus everybody else. And that's a problem.
Interesting. Yeah, no, and I definitely see where you're coming from. I start to get worried at linebackers if they're getting 85 or fewer. 85 is kind of my cutoff. And again, with it all depends kind of on your league, right? I mean, if you're playing four linebackers, a guy playing 75 to 80% of snaps could be useful, but if it's two or three, I think 85 is kind of my cutoff, where I'm like, you know what, I'm 80%, and it really depends on his situation and where he's coming off. So, you know, that could be all personnel dependent, but yeah, 85 or more, I think they still have some use. Like you said, it's about 7 snaps, but when you extrapolate it's like, okay, that is a couple of games. So, but there are quite a few guys that are playing 85% or more of the snaps, which is a little surprising. But it's definitely you know, you obviously you want the guys that are staying on the field, and like you said, there could be some of those blowout situations or coming off 3 or 4 snaps. We're not going to play this guy in this series because it's a 30-point lead, garbage time. So yeah, I think everything does tend to normalize with some of these players.
So a good example I would use for that is Devondre Campbell. So Devondre Campbell is playing every snap for the Packers, same as he did last year, and he's being really efficient, actually. He's getting a lot of tackles. He's doing really well per snap. Mm-hmm. But the Packers haven't played a lot. The Packers played 168 snaps through three games. Yep. So just to put that in context, the Dolphins have obviously played 4 games, but they played 269. So over 100 more snaps. Now, sure, he's not going to play 100 snaps this week, but you know, that's a problem. So at the moment, if you look at total playing time, he's outside the top 36. And it doesn't mean he's not a top linebacker. It's just teams do that. And this time last year, we had the same problem with Shaq Thompson. We were looking at the Panthers and people were going, what's wrong with, you know, Jeremy Chinn, Shaq Thompson? They just weren't playing. So, yeah, at the other end, the Seahawks, right? The Seahawks have led the NFL in defensive snaps 2 straight years. And everyone's like, oh, it's what they're like, and their offense isn't very good. They're going to do it again. Seahawks, bang average, like literally bang average in the NFL this year. So it's just an unpredictable thing, but it does tend to be stable through the season quite often.
Yeah,
so
I think they're at about, 200 snaps defense? I think they're at about 200. for the Seahawks? They played about 200 defensive snaps, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so literally 199.
199, yeah, that's probably, yeah.
66 and a half. An average NFL defensive snaps per game. 66 and a half. So they are right bang on what you'd expect.
So is Jordan Brooks now your favorite linebacker because of his whole dance and movement that he does before pre-snap?
I've got nothing against Jordan Brooks, even though he can't stop the pass and he's absolutely terrible at that aspect. If people want to like him, great. But Jordan Brooks was clearly all through the offseason being bought at peak value. He played over 1,100 snaps last year. So you just can't bet on that. It's unlikely to happen ever again for him. So you were buying him as LB3, 4, 5 based on last year. We always tell people not to do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I for the most part avoided him, and I bought his partner a little bit lower with Cody Barton. I bought on him a little lower because you're not getting an increased role. You're not seeing an increased opportunity.
Right.
There's nothing added to Jordan Brooks outside of him now calling the plays. He's still going to be the linebacker. Cody Barton, meanwhile, was the guy for how long it is. You know, he could be pulled next week or 2 weeks from now, and I'm going to be sad because I have him everywhere. But Cody Barton was the one that saw the increased role and had the skyrocketing potential with playing time. So that was the guy I was buying in on, and that's kind of what you're looking into, what you want to do.
100%. You want to look for the guys who you've got things. So we talk about this all the time, but just to reiterate for the followers, I know I come across as negative about certain players. The reason I'm doing that
is your brand.
Negative against any power who's getting bought at peak value. I'm really positive about all the guys who have got good roles who are going much later. So Miles Jack, I've got quite a bit of Miles Jack because he was being drafted down at 30, and he had every chance to do just as well and perform just as well as Jordan Brooks. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just one example. The point is, you gamble on volume because injury and luck are massive things. So give me all the linebackers who I expect to be a full-time player who can draft after the top 20 linebackers. I'm massively high on those guys, but nobody ever talks about them. So I never get to talk about those, and I don't believe in any of them in particular. I believe in throwing my darts at those guys.
Right. Yep. I do like some of the elite guys just because there's some safety there, and there's a little bit of safety. You can rest knowing, okay, if outside of, you know, we throw injuries out because it could happen, but all things being equal and we throw out injuries, I know this guy is going to play 100% of the snaps, and at some point he's going to finish with X amount of tackles and gives me a safe floor in fantasy, and that's kind of what I want, at least maybe one of those guys. But at the same time, what am I willing to pay for it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a point we disagree in. I'm not telling you you're wrong.
No, I don't. It's interesting. No, we have different lineup construction philosophies.
Absolutely. Totally right. We build teams in different ways, which is good. So I don't throw out injuries at all because I know there's a, whatever it is, 40% chance of even those top guys, Roquan Smith, of getting hurt. And our brains say, oh, Roquan Smith played every snap for the last 3 years. So he's injury resistant or tough or whatever. He's got just as much chance. This is the whole thing of, you know, close your eyes and walk across the freeway. And if you do that 3 times and don't get hit, it doesn't mean you're gonna stay safe on the 4th time. You've still got the chance. But we love that. That data looks safe to us. And I don't think it is.
See, and that's... So when it comes to that, okay. So if I draft Roquan Smith, I draft him knowing, all right, if he plays a full 17, this is what I'm getting. And then at the same time, knowing, all right, you know what? This is why I attack linebacker. Because if I lose Roquan Smith for X amount of games, I've got 4 or 5 linebackers that I can cycle through and start for him who I think can be just as productive. So that's kind of the rationale that I've got a decent replacement level linebacker that I can bring up. So if I'm starting 3 or 4 linebackers, if I draft Roquan Smith, but also at the same time, if I'm drafting Roquan Smith, that is sacrificing a position player. And that's why I typically won't spend an early round pick on an elite linebacker. But if I do, I will be confident in knowing or be confident in my skill to identify later linebackers that I can draft later potentially as bench guys and depth guys. But that's kind of how I attack when I mm-hmm. target those elite guys.
I think that makes total sense yep. in some leagues.
Yep.
So in leagues where there's a big positional discrepancy, where linebackers are way more important than other defensive positions, and you know, we all play in different scoring, but in scoring systems where we're scoring all defensive positions the same, they're all that. They all value linebackers way more than every other position. Yes, that 100% makes sense. But you can't invest in top guys and have loads of depth for every.
No, it's impossible. No, it's impossible.
So it depends what your league rewards. So that in some leagues, yeah, of course, it makes total sense. But you've got to balance that. And 3, 4, 5 years ago, I was with you in I can always find another linebacker. So two things come to that. One, true position. So if you're playing in a, you know, linebackers or edge players are linebackers, yes, there's still loads of them everywhere. If you're playing in true position, that's just not true. It's a restricted number, and the whole changes we've talked about playing time. The number of reliable linebackers has massively dropped when you factor in true position. So 5 years ago, I would never invest high in them because you can find them. They're 10 a penny. Now that there's only 30 guys in the league that I really trust every week.
Yep.
So those guys are really valuable to me.
Yep.
But this massively depends on your league. It could be anywhere on those spectrums.
Yep. And there's no wrong way to build your team. Yep. You're going to sacrifice you're going to sacrifice other positions and at you know, where you want to get your guy. So if you want Roquan Smith, you're probably looking at a 5th round pick, and you're probably losing out on a potential running back or a potential wide receiver. So it all depends on your risk tolerance and what you're willing to bet on when it comes to building your team. And this is draft talk. We're in the middle of the season. Roquan Smith is good. And, unfortunately, Nicholas Morrow hasn't really taken off yet. So, but anyway, we digress.
Yeah, where was Roquan? I'm just looking up some ADP, which I ran in the summer, and of course I can't find him here. But here we go. Roquan Smith, for me, again, certain settings, your league may vary scoring, blah, 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 blah. He was going to LB2 back when I did this sort of August time. So it's Micah Parsons, Roquan Smith, Shaquille Leonard, good example of, you know, he's played every game so far. He's reliable. Mm.
Yeah, the back injury was a little bit of a worrisome for me at the beginning of the season.
But Roquan Smith, and this is very much true position equal scoring between positions, i.e. different scoring for different players. Roquan Smith is going at the same place as Nick Bosa, which is fine, going about the same spot as Darren Waller. What have we got? Linebacker just after Amari Cooper. As a running back, David Montgomery, who's RB19 there. So, you know, it depends what you want to do. Josh Allen was going about 69. I mean, of all those guys, sure, I like Roquan Smith as well, but give me Jonathan Allen or Josh Allen or Amari Cooper over him, please. Because, you know, well, we've talked about this, but where was Miles Jack in this interesting?
God, he had to be, yeah, that was about LB what? 40.
So he was going at, yeah, pick 277 compared to Roquan, where he was going at 67.
Yeah.
So 200.
That is tremendous value in return right there.
Yeah. I mean, look at, and it gets scary with late linebackers, but in just this particular data, and your data may differ. Mm-hmm. Who are we looking? Bobby Okay at LB22, Christian Kirksey LB23, Tremaine Edmonds LB24.
Mm-hmm.
Lavonte David, 29. This was Dino set up, so age is a factor. Demario Davis, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it's scary as hell, but you can clean up doing it.
Yep.
All right.
So, the big news of the week, though, Miles Garrett flipping his car a few times.
Multiple times he flipped his Porsche, apparently.
Yes, and word came out that apparently he is a bit of a lead foot. He got cited back-to-back days of 100 miles an hour. So got a ticket for speeding 100 miles an hour, and then the next day got another ticket for speeding 100 miles an hour. And apparently he was avoiding an animal, and that's what caused him to swerve and flip. So he says hopefully he has a wake-up call and has an epiphany for his driving. I hope when you flipped your Porsche a few times that kind of gives you some sort of epiphany, but when we look at IDP and we look at football, first of all, obviously the health it could have been a whole lot worse for not only him but his passenger as well.
But and other people on the road.
Like yeah, exactly. You're
less than 12 months ago.
Yeah, and where he and how, where he flipped it, and at what time he flipped it. Schools are letting out, so I mean, we're talking. It could have been really bad, so he's really lucky. But so far, just a couple of he caught a couple of bruises. When you saw his face, though, his face was all swollen, bloodshot eyes, shoulder sprain, and a bicep sprain. He's out, and thank God that because he was ready to play. He said he's going to leave it up to the doctors, but he's out. So that means his replacements. Who are his replacements? You've got the rookie Alex Wright. You've got mm-hmm. Isaiah Thomas, and you've got Isaac Rochelle. Now Jadeveon Clowney is still questionable, but I am not sure if so. If Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett don't play, you've got three edge rushers who have combined for two total pressures this season to replace Myles Garrett and his 15 pressures and what, four sacks?
The Browns' heel turn is so deep. What's going on with Chase Winovich? Is he down for the year?
That is a...
I mean, it sort of doesn't matter. We're in a
yeah,
position
he's...
where we're expecting Chase Winovich to be good news. So, yeah, that's not great.
Yeah, I've not heard hide nor hair of Chase Winovich. I know he was put on... Oh, he was put on IR with a hamstring injury about last week. So he's not a factor. So, so basically, yeah, you don't... These rookies or these young players are going to have to step up, and that's... To fill in for someone like Myles Garrett, that's a pretty tall task to fill.
And that's going to really hurt the whole team's pass rush, right? Because there is no decent interior pass rusher. We've talked about that quite a lot before. There's just no one on the roster. So if you haven't really got any pass rush from the front four, that's going to really change the profile of what we would expect to see from that defense.
Yes, absolutely. You're going to see...
JK is having a... slightly tricky second season, mm-hmm. I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not blitzer anyway. It's not his game.
Yeah, I mean, you've got Jacob Phillips now who is a little bit speedy, but you're going to have to totally change because if you're not going to be getting any pressure up front, you're going to be needing your corners to really step up against Drake London. Second wide receiver I'm not really too concerned about. But then Kyle Pitts, so what do you do with Kyle Pitts? Essentially, what I would probably do is I would double Kyle Pitts and I would double Drake London and I would let Mariota just kind of, you know, let it, you know, if he's going to beat me in the air with Olamide Zaccheaus or however you pronounce his name, then that's it. But I'm not expecting much of a pass rush. I'm probably expecting more. It's probably going to be, I think it's going to be a fairly high scoring game.
I mean, yeah, it's Marcus Mariota and what's his name? Brown's there standing. So, I'm not going to be watching this one on TV. Put it that way.
And Denzel Ward actually has not been playing very up to his standards. So, he hasn't been very good. I don't know. But in terms of IDP replacements, I don't know if I'm really rushing out to the waiver wire to replace Myles Garrett with Alex Wright. I mean, if you find... He's probably the guy that obviously he's the rookie. He's got some upside. It would not surprise me if he's the one that kind of has the higher, I guess, has that high pressure rate and gets the majority of the snaps. But as of right now, I'm not rushing to the waiver wire to really pick anybody up right now.
I don't think you need to. And this is when we talk about that big second tier of edge rushers, right? So sure, Myles Garrett lives in that top with the other five guys. By the way, poor one out for Joey Bosa. Nasty injury.
Yeah, that's
exciting. Everyone's roster at the moment has got a bunch of Charles Harris, Trayvon Walker, Za'Darius Smith, Lorenzo Carter, Kwity Paye, Matt Judon, Jonathan Grenard, Jerry Hughes. But we've all got those guys. So you don't need to panic and go, oh, who's the Browns guy? Cause you've got a guy who's probably going to pay 35 snaps and get 2 to 5 pressures and maybe get a sack. So put one of those guys out. It's fine.
Yep. But yeah, it's just... But yeah, I didn't rank him this week expecting him not to play. And hopefully the Browns learned something last year with Baker Mayfield and his injury. And you know what? Just he may be cleared to play, But look at the, there's still the eye test. He still doesn't pass the eye test. Rest him.
So you've lived in Cleveland how many years at this
point? Oh, my whole life.
Your whole life.
Whole life.
So when someone says the sentence to you, hopefully the Browns have learned.
Yeah,
seriously.
That, yeah, that. Yeah. As soon as I said that, like, oh, crap. That they've never learned since they've been back. I'll put it that way.
Narrator.
Since they've been
back. The Browns did not learn.
No. Yeah. Record scratch. You might wonder how I've gotten in this situation. I don't learn from my mistakes.
Poor Brownies. All right. Let's move on from them. Let's talk more about linebackers because that'll make some people happy. So you came up with an interesting feature here. We want to talk about, again, tackle efficiency. We're three and a bit games in. We talked about it sort of giving a good idea, but tackle efficiency can look really weird after three games. And we look at the chart. There's a handful of guys really high. Miles Jack has, what we were talking about in the week, he's got 40 tackles and his career high is, I believe, 117.
Yeah, Miles Jack is at a 16.5% efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, again, depends which numbers you look at. The PFF numbers, he is currently on a higher tackle efficiency than Chris Borland was in his amazing season.
Yeah.
Obviously not sustainable, so we're going to see him fall down. So we look at some guys who are below the curve, and we're going to assume they get a bit better. But what's interesting, we talk about this quite a lot, people who are especially high generally don't have a reason. It's not because they're good or they've got a nose for the ball or whatever cliche. It's just because you happen to get lucky. You can get lucky over 17 games. It happens all the time. People who are below the curve often do have a reason. So Jerome Baker, we've talked about, he's down there because he plays a lot on the edge. Micah Parsons is not even a linebacker, but he's probably a linebacker in your league. And he's probably the least efficient tackler out of the whole position because, you know, it's much harder to get tackled when you line up on the edge than it is when you're covering crossing routes.
Mm-hmm.
So who have you got your eye on that is a bit low?
So there's,
who we think they're going to get higher?
So there's three guys that, actually maybe even four. There are four guys that are standing out to me that are low. DeMario Davis with the Saints. He's at about an 8%. Fred Warner, who is at about 8.8%. We've got Levante David, who is at about 9.5%. And we've got Logan Wilson, who upped his a little bit to 9.8%. But the three really that I'm keying in on are Davis, Warner, and David, who have traditionally who have been traditionally around the 12% area range.
Yeah, so let's talk about DeMario Davis. I've got a couple of other ones that jump out at me.
Yep.
Getting them. DeMario Davis, who's traditionally been the most reliable linebacker in the NFL. He's, what, 31 or something? But he signed a new contract for another 2 years. Yep. Decent money, so we still like him. Looks really weird. It looks like an outlier to me, but the temptation is for our brains to go, well, he's old. He's not very good now.
Yeah.
So that's why it's low. But
And the funny thing is, that's not where my brain is going. Right. I'm not going to the old.
Okay.
I'm not going old, but I'd be interested to see where you're going. But no, I will say I'm not going old, but I'd be interested to see where you're going.
So the obvious example is just the Saints defense is really, really bad because it's not age, right? Being a bad or a good linebacker does not affect that stat.
Yeah.
It does not.
Yeah.
So there must be something else. It's either luck, great, that'd be brilliant news, or something else, which is probably down to pass rush. Feels like the obvious thing because Saints at the moment, probably the worst pass rush team in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how these things are linked. I'm hypothesizing here, but who knows? Maybe that's the thing. What do you reckon?
So for me, Pete Werner has just swallowed up the tackle share. He's been around the ball a little bit more and has been a little bit quicker to the ball. That's kind of what I'm seeing right now. So it's definitely not an age thing because, you know, he's still playing well. But Pete Werner, has just been getting all the tackles so far. And, you know, Davis just seems to be maybe a step late. Or the plays are flowing away from him, and Pete Werner just happens to be there. So, kind of a few things there that's kind of happening that I've noticed just three games in.
Yeah, I'm slightly skeptical of that concept. And again, you know, it's good that we disagree on these things. Because the idea that sort of certain players get picked on more than others, it doesn't bear that true on large scales. Now, could it in three games with Pete Warner coming in the second year, he's definitely getting more targeted, even though he's playing less. But there's a few things there. I would expect that to even out over the season. Yep. So I'm looking at this now. I might be stupid here. I might be missing the wood for the trees. I think that's going to shift over a little bit. I think Werner is performing much higher than he will do over the season mm-hmm. now, and Davis is performing lower.
Yep.
But I don't know.
And then same thing with Fred Warner. I took a look at, I think it was either last week's game or the week before. And it was another case of Fred Warner was being kind of blocked away from plays. Mm-hmm. Took a bad angle, and Dre Greenlaw is healthy and he's getting some more of the tackles. But for Warner, I'm in the whole things will even out. We'll kind of adjust to the norm. So with Warner, I'm not too concerned, but week 4, 5, and 6, we're getting now into the area where you said that past that first quarter of the season yeah. where that's kind of where data kind of normalize and we may see what we see. So, but with Warner, I don't have as much concern with Warner as I do with Davis right now.
Yeah, it's fair. I basically value the two of them exactly the same going forward. Mm-hmm. I value them exactly the same going into the season, mm-hmm. but you could get Dre Greenlaw 35 linebacker picks later. So
yeah.
Got way more Dre Greenlaw than Warner. Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
And I assume you're not worried with Levante David 3 games in either.
No, probably not. Although that's an extreme case of the whole targeting thing, right? Because Levante David is one of the best coverage linebackers of the NFL,
yep.
and his partner Devin Smith is one of the worst.
So
if you are going to see that, then surely the Bucs is the place you see it. Bucs defense interesting this year. Mm-hmm. I quite like them. Yeah, so I like all those ones. I mean, my tendency is not to believe it. It'll change, but I did say at the start of the podcast that you know numbers are where they are, so yep. I'm conflicted here.
Yeah,
things going on. This is what happens in IDP.
I'm not dropping these guys. If you're dropping, don't drop Fred Warner for the free agent waiver wire pick of DeJour.
No, definitely not. In fact, Demario Davis I like as a trade. If you can get someone to throw him in and someone who thinks that maybe he's getting old and this is the beginning of the end for him and it's a dynasty league and blah, 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 yeah, go for that. Start tossing out late round picks and see what you can do. I think it's a great buy. A couple of other similar players I want to point out. One, Patrick Queen. So Patrick Queen is 5th in linebacker snaps at the moment and like 25th in tackles or something like that. So he had that sack in week 1, which really helped. And then he played a load against the Dolphins, but he's down on 8.5%, which is like super low. And I sort of do worry about him. And then Frankie Louvu. So Frankie Louvu is the big shock in IDP so far this season. He is the one guy that is an every down linebacker that we did not expect. The problem is he still plays a bit of his time on the edge. It was less last week, which is great news, but he's still out there a little bit, and he's not exactly the most mobile linebacker in the world. So I do expect him to have a slightly low tackle efficiency anyway. Maybe not 8% or 9%, but you know, is he likely gets 12 to 14? I'm less confident in him than other players.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Louvu. I'm not expecting him to reach that elite status, especially if he's going to ping pong back between more edge snaps and more off-ball linebacker snaps. So,
yeah.
Is it going to be situation dependent? I guess that kind of goes to where the whole what offenses are running, what are they running on third and long? Is he going to be deployed as a pass rusher, third and second and short? Is he going to be as that off ball linebacker to stuff the run? But it's inconsistent for him. But yeah, like you, I'm not expecting a 12 to 13% tackle rate with Queen. He's just never been a good tackler.
He's never been that good.
So, I mean, he's already got 6 missed tackles already this season.
Yeah, and again, it is possible to have a low tackle efficiency because you miss a lot of tackles and you're not very good at getting them. So, Tay Crowder is a good example. Mm-hmm. Really bad for the Giants last year. Sort of looks that bad again this year. You can just be a bad tackler and have a low. But the opposite is not true. You can't be a really good linebacker and have a high one. That's not consistent.
Yeah. But you can also have a high tackle efficiency and lots of missed mm-hmm. tackles. I think
Yep.
But so far, Patrick Queen is grading very low in tackling, and he hasn't been when you're not, when you don't have a lot of tackle attempts, when you have a lot of volume and you're missing on a lot of them, that's just not a, it's not a recipe for fantasy points.
It's horrible. I don't trust him at all. And there's a couple of leagues where he's just about maybe my third best linebacker, and I feel really, really happy. All right, one other player I want to talk about, and this one actually is, this one is someone I expect to get much better over the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Not a player I've been massively high on before, David Long of the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had a very quiet season. His tackle rate is really low. He's mm-hmm. had seven pressures so far, but no sacks. Mm-hmm. There's a few things that are going on which are just weirdly not worked out for him at the moment. Now, I do think he's a great player. No, absolutely I do not. Do I think he's an every down linebacker that's going to start performing better than whatever he is at the moment? LB35? Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, love David Long. Again, you probably can't buy him unless he's on a really bad team that needs to start losing on purpose.
Yeah.
But he's one of the biggest red flags for a linebacker who I expect to perform much better going forward.
Yeah, if you can buy, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. And if you have David Long again, he's getting snaps, and that's what you want. And it just hasn't come to fruition. And I hate to use the term variance, but you know, that's kind of what IDP is. You've got 11 players going after one ball, and you mm-hmm. don't know where the ball is going. That's why we play this game, and that's why it's so maddening, but it's also so much fun to try to solve this puzzle on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean, if it was fun, then... Or
if it was easy,
you wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
Oops. Yeah, that's not the right word. All right, let's move on from linebackers. We wanted to start doing a feature here. I've put a couple of plays in here, but I'm sure you've got some other ones. We're going to do targets for the week.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably a little bit late, but going forward. So David Long, I'd probably put on the list as well. One of the biggest targets for me, short term, this week, is Darius Harris, mm-hmm. Chiefs. So last week, Willie Gay was out. Mm-hmm. He was suspended?
Suspended for the next four games. Injured.
Yeah, silly Willie Gay. So everybody wanted to put Leo Chanel in because we all love rookies, and you know, everybody wants to go, I liked him when it blah 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 blah. He played 11 snaps, and Darius Harris played 62 mm-hmm. and racked up some numbers. So I'm starting him next week in a couple of places. He feels like a decent bet to me.
See, I would agree, but Steve Spagnuolo is not a very kind defensive coordinator to us IDP mm-hmm. players. So I am cautiously optimistic on Darius Harris, just for the simple fact that snaps could flip-flop this week. Leo Chanel could mm-hmm. get 50 snaps. Darius Harris could get maybe 20 or 30. But Darius Harris did look good. He didn't look out of place. And, you know, he had a good game. I don't have a problem with Darius Harris. I'm just weary with Steve Spagnuolo.
So I get that point. And look, I've been leading the charge for the last few years in Steve Spagnuolo does not deploy a full-time linebacker. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's really hard to trust any of them. Mm-hmm. The only exception I see to that is when he's got a couple of injuries yeah. and he sort of has to. And yeah. it happened a couple of times last year where Nick Bolton played 70 snaps.
Yep.
And it happened last week.
Yep.
So, yeah, fine, Leo Chanel played 20, but Nick Bolton and Willie Gay week before, were both basically full-time linebackers.
Yep.
And this week, Darius Harris only missed 9 snaps.
Yep.
So unless they've got someone else from somewhere, which I don't think they have, mm-hmm. I sort of think it's going to look similar.
Yep.
Now, you're right, Spags haters this. He is not a person I trust at all. But in that world of where we're always looking for those linebackers, again, depends on your league. Yep. If you've got the opportunity to use an edge rusher instead yep. of him, do that. Probably a better bet. But for the sort of leagues I'm playing in, Darius Harris helps me. I think he could bet.
If you need somebody, by all means, I am not cutting or dropping a full-time linebacker for Darius Harris. I've seen a few leagues where a full-time linebacker was dropped for Darius Harris, and you can better believe once waivers hit, I am putting in my bid on that full-time linebacker. One of my targets is Jacob Phillips. I think he's going to be, Anthony Walker's out for the year. Mm-hmm. JOK is now dealing with a groin injury. I don't like soft tissue injuries. And the depth at linebacker on the Browns is not great. So I think Jacob Phillips has to play.
Tacky. I want more Tacky Tacky.
Well, I think Tacky Tacky, I think his snaps will probably increase, but Jacob Phillips is the play caller. So he has to, he's probably going to play, if he doesn't play 100% of the snaps, he's going to be between 85 and 90. Because I don't know who else is going to call the plays. Tacky Tacky's never called the plays.
Clearly the guy.
He has to be the guy. And I think you're probably going to see, I think you're probably going to see more Tacky Tacky this week as opposed to, you know, I don't know what JOK is going to be, how he's going to be, but I think you might see Tacky Tacky get 40 to 50% of the snaps. So he's a big play guy. He's gotten some interceptions. He's pretty decent in coverage, but Jacob Phillips right now is the guy that I want from Cleveland. He's my target for the week.
Yeah, love that one. By the way, poor one out for JOK slightly. He went into the season, he was everyone's tip for the guy that had a, you know, promising but tricky rookie season. He's going to be a top guy linebacker going forward, and sometimes, I mean, hopefully he pulls things around and does become that, but at the moment it's not looking great.
Yeah, I just don't like, yeah, like I said, I don't like those soft tissue injuries, you know, especially so beginning at the beginning of the season, no less. I mean, this is when you're supposed to be the most healthy, and here we are in week 3, week 4, and this is all across the board. Just the injury reports already are insane. So
yeah, obviously we want everyone to be healthy and well, but we know that's not true because the NFL is pretty hard. All right, player I want to talk about adding, and again, he's not a top 12 guy, but I think he helps, is Danico Autry of the Titans. I think Autry is the best pass rusher on the team. Certainly the best pass rusher who goes anywhere near the edge. You can argue Jeffrey Simmons is better than him, but Bud Dupree is out. Harold Landry is out for the season. Rashad Weaver is sort of okay, and there's a bunch of other guys, but Autry is the most consistent guy I think we can see there. And yeah, he plays some time on the interior. He does a bit of interior rushing, but I think he's massively under the radar because he's a guy that's generally had an okay, not amazing career because he's that lack of efficiency because he plays inside a little bit. I think he's a good bet at the moment if you need somebody to be in that stable. So, for example, if you've got, you know, Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney on your team, and now you're going, oh my golly, I'm absolutely ruined, give me Autry. I think he slots easily into that top, probably top 36 edge for me this week.
That is a good call. He was, because he was someone who, I'll be honest, he wasn't on my radar. Rashad Weaver was someone I liked at the beginning of the season, but yeah, Autry just seems to be picking things up. I think he leads the Titans in pressures. Just looking at it, I think he's doubled Rashad Weaver's pressure total in fewer snaps. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, if you've lost Myles Garrett, at this point, you're throwing stuff at a wall and just hoping it sticks, because that's basically what you're trying to do. Trying to replace someone like Myles Garrett, you're just taking a bunch of paper towels, throwing them at a wall, and hoping something sticks. Because it's tough to replace an elite talent like that. So no, I think that's a good call. You brought him up to my attention because as soon as I saw some notes, I'm like, oh, interesting. And I looked, I'm like, holy crap, he's got more. That's, I mean, 12 pressures. That's a lot of pressures. Yeah. That's a good. He's got a good pressure rate. So
it's such an easy win at this time of year. Just look for people who've got a load of pressures, mm-hmm. haven't got a load of sacks yet, because we know that is not consistent. So here's some examples. Sam Hubbard, although he got most of those pressures last week against Miami. Uchenna Nwosu, Jalen Phillips got one last week. Autry, that we talked about. Za'Darius Smith, Adafe Owe. Ravens are putting a lot on his plate. Emmanuel Ogba, you talked about George Karlaftis, the rookie. All those guys are going to start getting more sacks.
Yep. You know, I actually like, for an interior guy, we like to, you know, we're trying to, you know, include some of the interior guys, but Jerron Payne has been really good, and even Shai Tuttle has been pretty good from a tackle standpoint. He's been real good for tackle leagues, but Jerron Payne, 13 pressures. He's stepped up on the interior, because as of right now, Montez Sweat just hasn't. And unfortunately for me, I've got a lot of Montez Sweat, and they're just, my teams are sweating. You know, no pun intended, but my teams are sweating with Montez. So I don't know. Maybe he's just one of those guys that needs, but I mean, you got Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen. Those are guys that get a lot of attention.
And F.A. Abada. Don't forget London's own F.A. Abada.
So I'm hoping Chase Young returns soon. Maybe that will help Montez Sweat. But even Chase Young, I don't know. is he a bust?
You can't trust Washington at the moment. Nothing good there. All right, we've got 5 minutes, and there's a few things we want to tick off, so we'll fire through them really quickly. I want to talk about Isaiah Simmons. So, talking about busts, Isaiah Simmons, I think, is a bust. Now, sure, he's fast and he's big and he can play in the slot and he can play linebacker and he can rush the passer, but he's not very good at any of those things.
No.
So, he's the classic Swiss Army knife that breaks every time you try and use it to do anything. And the Cardinals may well have just gone, he's not very good at any of those things. I'd rather put someone on the... You can substitute as much as you want. So they've probably got a better player at all those things than him on the roster.
Talk about... He's a jack of all trades, master of none, and a specialist of none, which is not good. They figured he's played well in spurts. Like, his playing time now has been, what, down to, what, 14, 15 snaps? Yeah. Yeah. And maybe with him, less is more. Because I watched the All-22 against Kansas City, and it's Kansas City. Andy Reid makes a bunch of people look bad. But he really looked worse than even Andy Reid can make people look. He just looks out of position. He doesn't look like he knows really where to go, and he just doesn't look like he's interested.
Yeah, it's just absolutely toxic at the moment. You want no part of that, and you probably can't sell him. You probably can't do anything.
You can't sell him, and honestly, I don't... I talk about FOMO. If I drop him, I don't have any FOMO. I'm not missing out. I don't have any fear of missing out on him.
Yeah, right. That's not good. Tell you who I want to talk about, and you line up for the next one. Bills. Let's talk about Bills. Bills might have the best pass rush in the NFL. It's absolutely fearsome. But here we go. Over the last 2 weeks, how many Bills linemen have played 35 snaps in the game? The answer is zero. None of them have hit 35 snaps in week 2 or 3. Which just tells you what they do. They rotate 9 guys, at least 8, sometimes 9, sometimes 10 guys on the NFL. So are they going to have good weeks? We talk about this all the time. Yes, Gregory Rousseau is good. Von Miller is good. They've got good players, but they all just terrify me. So.
That's insane, because Rousseau, he got, what, 40, 45 snaps. I mean, he had a high usage rate week 1, and now he has 53 in his last 2.
Yep.
Which is really strange. But Rousseau has been very productive with those snaps.
Yeah. I think we're seeing it come through as well. So one of the long-term IDP questions has been, you know, we are seeing in the modern game teams rotate their edges much more. Some teams keep those guys in. And the question has been, well, can you prove that it's better for them? So here's examples I would look at. Gregory Rousseau and Von Miller, who have been devastating on playing 30 snaps a game. Mm-hmm. And then Odafe Oweh that we talked about just now. He's had to play loads for the Ravens, like way more than he played last year, although he's a rookie, way more than they want him to. And frankly, he looks tired, and he's not been his best for much of those games, but he's had to be out there. Now, he's doing all right, but I think that's a really good example of how those low-snap guys can look much better. And on the face of it, it seems wild if you go Gregory Rousseau and Von Miller are playing 30 snaps a game, and Odafe Oweh is playing 60 snaps a game. Mm-hmm. That seems crazy, but it's working.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Rousseau and Miller are the high... Buffalo has 3 of the top 10 graded pass rushers. I mean, Boogie Basham is right there at the top. He's only played he's only got 41 pass rush snaps. But Boogie Basham's at the top, and Rousseau and Miller are right there. And they're
Basham goes inside as well.
Yeah, they're talented guys. They're getting to the quarterback.
Yeah. Right. Anyone else that we want to talk about?
I think I'm
cool.
Flesh out.
Let's do it. All right. No problem throwing more names and numbers at people. In that case, we will wrap it up. We've got a load of football to watch this week. I mean, look, we've just touched on 20 different storylines that are absolutely fascinating. So this is a great time of the year. All that stuff that we talked about. And now you've got a real good idea of what those defenses look like, what they're trying to do, how they play with their personnel, who they believe in, who they don't, what they're trying to do to them, what that looks like in numbers, how that translates to points. Yep. I just think this is a good time of the year to to really try and look into what players are doing, because this is the last chance you'll get for the year to probably make some forecasts, like all those pass rushes we talked about, and yep. we're getting pressure but not sacks. That doesn't happen after week 8 because things mostly even themselves out. So you can do well now. It's probably a good time to go into the trade market.
Yeah, if there's a guy that you believe in that is playing a little bit lower than normal or not producing, but you believe in him, yeah, now's a good, really good time to buy low. I think you and I agree on DeMario Davis. I think he's a pretty good buy low candidate. Mm-hmm. If you're kind of in a win now mode in Dynasty. But yeah, target those guys that are falling a little bit below expectation, but you know are going to kind of normalize. And, you know, maybe if you can, I don't know how smart your league is, but if you can sell high on someone like Zaire Franklin, which is probably going to be tough to do, but kind of sell high on those guys that potentially could be losing some snaps. Because I know Rashawn Evans is one of those guys. Deion Jones is coming back. So maybe if you can sell high on somebody like him, maybe try and do that. Because once Deion Jones comes back, that's going to be a situation where, I'm not going to say it gets blown up, but I think Michael Walker is probably still going to be safe. But that is definitely going to be an interesting rotation when someone like him comes back. And if Deion Jones is on your waiver wire, probably now is a good preemptive time to pick up.
Yeah, good point. All right, let's wrap it up there. As always, thank you everybody for listening and spending your precious time with us. We hope you've had a great Sunday. Hopefully I'll get to watch some of the game in London tomorrow, which is very exciting. We hope you smash your weeks and we appreciate your time. Mike, thanks. It's been great to chat with you, and everyone at home, cheerio.